everyone back to Dead Pit Horror Talk Radio. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And we got a great show for you this evening. The Horror Roundtable 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Which is going to feature the Butcher from KillReviews.com. Another good friend of ours, Stephanie, who we know from the message board as well.
If you hadn't had a chance to hear the first Horror Roundtable, it went over really well. The format of it is we get four people together. It's CK and I and two other people. And we ask anything that has to do with horror-related topics. It could be about the business of horror. It could be about horror movies in general. Just anything like that.
It could be about crack whores.
Yeah, it could be about crack whores. French whores. It doesn't really matter. So, and then, you know, we get all kinds of different commentary and opinions going. And most of the time, it works out well.
Yeah. And we're taking a little break from all the interviews we've been doing lately. And, you know, there's not much news going on this week, so I don't think we're going to mention many news topics because there really aren't any. But we're going to read the fan mail a little bit later. And we're going to talk about a bunch of upcoming DVDs and some stuff that's already out.
DVD reviews.
We've got Dream Reaper from Kevin Strange, and we'll talk about that. That's a freaking amazing film.
Yeah, probably one of the best no-budget horror independent films I've ever seen, I think.
We've got a film from Amy Lynn Best, who is receiving, you know, a lot of praises on the internet for her work. This movie is known as Severe Injuries.
Mm-hmm. Which I also thought was a good movie.
Yep. We have a movie from Yoshihiro Nakamura, and he actually directed a pretty good Asian horror film called The Booth. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a little bit of an unearthed horrors documentary film. We're going to talk about Tom Savini's Scream Greats Volume 1.
Which is not available anywhere on DVD that I know of, but legally. It is available on DVD-R from Tom Savini, I think.
I think Tom Savini sells it.
Also, we're going to talk about a movie that may have the most misleading title I've ever seen in any horror film ever. Joel M. Reed's Bloodbath.
Oh, no.
That's right.
That's what I said the whole time I watched it, but we'll get into that a little bit later. So, we're going to get right to the roundtable, I suppose. We can go right to it. And there's not a whole lot of news. Usually the news topics is right up front here. Mm-hmm. I know a couple things we can talk, you know, a little bit about this week is Rob Zombie had his first interview since they announced the Halloween deal or whatever. Mm-hmm. And a couple things sort of interesting to me is he mentioned the characters Laurie Strode and Dr. Loomis will be in his film.
Yeah. I just don't understand why we didn't get that interview. I mean, I figured.
I don't either.
You know, because Rob, he's fickle like that sometimes. I mean, sometimes he doesn't want to talk to me. I'll call him up, but.
I mean, we've talked to him. I called him up the other night and said, come on the show. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've listened to the show. You know what we do. Mm-hmm. You know.
I said, you know, come on the show. Bring Sherry along because, you know, we always have Sherry over for brunch.
Bring Sherry along with those pants that was in Devil's Rejects. Uh-huh. Yeah. And tell her not to wear a bra.
Yeah, and I'll stick a thumb right in the butt. Anyway.
But that's pretty much the biggest thing that happened this week. I mean, a lot of smaller things, which we'll probably get to next week.
Yeah,
and we'll talk a little bit about what we have planned for next week as well, because, you know, next week we don't have an interview either.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all like that?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's just how we roll.
Yeah, but we're going to have a big announcement a little bit later about who our interview will be 2 weeks from tonight.
Until then, enjoy the Horror Roundtable 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Special guest, The Butcher from KillerReviews.com, Stephanie, one of our friends from MySpace, and so forth and so on.
Big horror fans, both of them.
And we hope you enjoy all the topics and learn a little bit of something from the discussion.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have them on here on the show for everyone to enjoy all the topics, all their crazy ramblings. And just so you fans know, The Butcher loves Eli Roth, so this might be interesting.
Could be.
Yeah. So we'll see you after the break here on DudePoot.com.
Hey, this is Tom Savini. You probably know me as Sex Machine from Dusk Till Dawn, and you're listening to to Dead Pit Radio.
On October 20th through 22nd, 2006, in Racine, Wisconsin, it is. It came from Lake Michigan, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. All independent filmmakers nationwide are welcome to participate in. It came from Lake Michigan, with special guests including Lloyd Kaufman, Fred Olin Ray, Brink Stevens, Debbie Rochon, Susie Lorraine, Jason Paul Collum, Scott Goldberg, and many more. Be sure to check out It Came From Lake Michigan.com, or it might just come for you.
DeadPit.com. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill.
And we'd like to welcome on here for Horror Roundtable 2,
Electric Boogaloo.
We have our good friends Stephanie and the Butcher, who are fans of horror in general, and we can go ahead and get started. Y'all listen to the first roundtable, so I'm sure you know the basic rules.
First question would be, what effect do you think horror films geared toward preteens have had on the genre?
I definitely think, I mean, it's making a lot of money. You know, it's definitely popular to make a teen movie. It's more beneficial to the studios. It's a whole new genre, you know what I mean? That's like what they're doing now. You know, I mean, we're getting our R's here and there, but that's just a better deal. You know, the 13-year-olds, mostly female, I'm guessing, go to the theaters, and that's what makes the money.
Do you think it has any effect on the fact that we haven't seen as many slasher films these days?
No, I definitely think so. Yeah. I mean, I just think if you put out an R, you're just not going to make that much money. You know, should I think it's a business. But I think the people who do that, though, you know, the studios who put out those PG-13s, I don't think they're even horror fans. You know, I think they're just trying to make a decent movie, probably the best, but it's a different audience, I think. You know, I don't think they're targeting anybody on this call, anyway.
No, certainly not.
Especially not you guys, right?
No.
No, I don't think we're entertained years anymore. Yeah, I think that it really doesn't affect the genre as a whole. I think it just creates its own little genre within the horror genre, just for, you know, it's kind of like Sesame Street for horror.
No, I think that's a really good point, Creepy. Like, I was going to bring this up later. It's not one of my questions, but it's perfect segue here. Like, that audience is a whole different game.
Yeah.
Like those, the people who go see One Street of Calls, like, unless you're reviewing it, I think those people, you know, just watch, like, 10 horror movies a year, go to the theater just for those movies. You know, like, I mean, it's a whole different game, I think.
Yeah. What do you think, Steph?
Well, I think that it's mainly because they're making all the remakes and so many younger kids like that, so that's helping to promote those movies and get people out there to watch that.
Yeah.
For that.
But no, you're right, though. I don't think it doesn't affect, like, the whole horror deal. I mean, I don't think, like, we're affected by it. I just think it's its own thing, and the people who, like, you know, their target audience, it works great for the studio. They make a lot of money. The target audience loves it. But, you know, but we still get our, you know, Devil's Rejects here and there, or Wolf Creek, whatever.
Now, unfortunately, I just think it takes away a lot of money from other films that could actually be worth a damn that are put into these films that are just, you know, basically targeted to this specific group of people. There could be a lot more studio resources spent on something else worth, you know, watching if we didn't have this big trend going on right now that cater to 13, 14-year-olds, you know.
Anyway, who wants to do the next topic?
All right, well, I can go ahead here. It's the remake question. I mean, that's why, like 90% of the sponsors I got, you know, talk about remakes, talk about remakes. But I figured we would change it up, and the question is, do you think there's any positives to the remake craze?
Past 5 or 6 years, I'm guessing there have been roughly about 20 remakes come out.
Theatrical?
In mainstream, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
I can only think of two that I liked.
Which are?
I actually did like the Omen remake, and I liked the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
Here's what I think can be the only positive thing I can get out of remakes. It actually might bring more attention to the original film, and somebody might go out and watch the film just to see, you know, what the big deal is about the remake. But as for the films themselves, I just think that they're, most of the time, 95% of the time, inferior just by their nature, really.
Yeah. That's a good point, though, because, you know, about going back to the original, you know, one of my points, I have 2 points to this, and I think one of them is, like, let's say Dawn of the Dead comes out, you know, and there's a shitload of horror fans that are outraged. You know, how could you possibly fucking remake this classic? But yet, there's kids like 15, 16 who are, you know, probably not your hardcore horror fans, but they haven't heard about, you know, Dawn of the Dead. So they go see this movie, and they're like, oh, this movie fucking rocks. And then, like you said, Uncle Bill, that they go and rent the freaking DVD, you know? So
I don't know if I agree with that completely, because I think a lot of the people that are that age, they don't even know it's a remake.
No, I agree. But I think eventually that they find out. They like the movie. They're talking about it. You know, I mean, they're probably, I'd say probably, fucking guessing, I'd say 30% probably, you know, look into the original. And I just think it brings more horror fans. I mean, like, these kids that are 15, 16 are going to be our age, you know, we're like 50 or whatever, reminiscing about when they saw the fucking Dawn of Dead remake.
Yeah.
You know, I think it definitely brings more fucking people to the table.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know.
I agree with that, though. I really do.
I mean, for better or for worse, if there's more horror fans in the world, whatever level they are, you know, why not?
So, Seth, what do you think? Remakes? Any good qualities?
Well, I think that remakes are not good because it kind of takes away the real thing, you know, the real original movie, and that all these directors and stuff, they should come up with their own ideas, new ideas of movies.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That just doesn't seem to be happening at all right now.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, then again, though, guys and girls, there's a shitload of movies coming out that are horror. You know, like, there's probably, like, one every other weekend, probably. At least two a month.
There's not one for a while now. We looked, like, what was the next one? Pulse?
Yeah, there's Pulse in a couple weeks, then we haven't got Descent.
Yeah.
Yeah, not anything really worth seeing.
Yeah, the Descent's okay. You know, it's really overrated on the internet. I mean, it's a good movie, but...
Yeah, people are...
You know, I don't understand why it's not as good as High Tension or anything like that.
Yeah, it's just not, it doesn't have that, like, well, High Tension has that, you know, level of tension that in your face. Descent doesn't have that kind of energy.
It's okay. I mean, you know, that's all I can say about it.
But have you noticed, though, that because of remakes, that there's just huge, like, underground kind of horror scene now with people that, you know, start up their own websites, like
you
did?
That's an awesome point.
I mean, like, without that, there wouldn't be any of that, I don't think.
No, you're so right. There's like a whole underground thing now, you know, because people, there's like the horror, there's like all these like new horror fans, and the remakes are bringing in all like the younger kids who don't, you know too much about horror. And then you have the old school guys, and probably more you guys than me, who want, you know, the roots. I guess Steph, you too, you know, who really just want to stick with the roots. And all that group, I talk to these guys all the time, you know, there's like a whole underground circuit, and we all support each other. It's weird. It brings up a whole, like, you know, we're going to stick together. You know, we're independent. We're going to fucking support each other and watch movies, you know, watch a little bunch of independent movies, whatever.
Yeah. I think the sad thing is, though, like, you know, there, of course, are diehard fans like us that get on the internet and, you know, try to find out all that they can about a certain movie or the genre in general. But there's obviously not enough of us to change.
No fucking way.
Change the box office to something worth watching for once, you know.
No, I think that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, if there were more people like us, maybe we would get a movie like.
No, there just needs to be more money for people like us. Seriously,
we're so far gone from getting a movie like, and let's just say, Don't Go in the Woods or The Burning out in theaters now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might as well be back in the 20s.
You cannot be more right. There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
Those movies are going to get a theatrical. I mean, maybe limited in a couple cities, but no way. That kind of marketing campaign or whatever, you know?
Yeah, or even, you know, Friday the 13th. You know, when I have. Freddy vs. Jason didn't really have any gore in it at all compared to others.
Quid, yeah, all right.
Okay. And this can, you know, it can be blown wide open in this question. What is the one film that you consider a classic but that doesn't get the respect it deserves? Say, you know, a film that you think should be up there with Texas Chainsaw, Friday the 13th, Halloween, you know, all those classics.
Okay, two of my favorites that I think are classics is The Burning and Night of the Creeps, because those don't get recognized at all.
Yeah. Neither are out on DVD either.
I know.
Officially. I have them on DVD. I don't know about you.
You have them on DVD?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have both of them on DVD too.
Yeah.
I got them on eBay. Somebody must have burned them.
Yeah, I just burned them myself. I'm cheap like that.
Well, for me, the first answer that pops in my head is The Changeling, and it definitely has respect. You know, if you're going to pick a movie like this, I think it should be older, you know? And I think it has respect, but I don't think it's not nearly as well known as The Exorcist or Chainsaw Massacre, and that movie's fucking awesome. Like, it's genuinely scary.
Yeah.
And it's respected, but I don't think many people know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong.
I guess I kind of have to agree with The Night of the Creeps. I don't know why, I just always really love that movie. But another one that, I don't know if it should be up there with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it definitely should get more recognition as kind of like, you know, the Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff would be Blood Diner. But I just think that movie's classic.
I freaking see that poster all the time. I mean, whether it's like, you know, review sites or if I'm putting through my database and I see the freaking movie pop up.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, though.
It's more, it's like a horror comedy / parody, but there's no other film I can ever think of that even remotely liked that film, which I think, you know, makes it deserve some kind of recognition.
Yeah.
What I always say for this, and it does have a fair amount of respect, I guess, but it, you know, not on the level of the movies I mentioned before, as Phantasm. Because that's one movie I could probably watch over and over and over for days and not get sick of it.
That movie is unfucking believable.
Yeah. And it's one of the more original movies to come out of that time, too, when all slashers and stuff came out.
I mean, like, who didn't want a fucking flying spear to throw around?
Yeah.
I saw part two. Honest to God, I tried to make, like, those weapons.
Yeah.
You know, like the double barrel shotgun and shit?
Yeah.
I loved those movies.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much cool things in all those movies. And, you know, as a franchise, it just doesn't get through. I thought all the movies were good. Through four. And then you have all these Hellraiser fans, and hey, I like the first two Hellraisers.
The first 17?
But, yeah, I mean, what are we on now, like 9? I'm out of hand, they need to quit that, seriously.
Yeah, is it still the same guy playing Pinhead? It is, right?
Yeah.
Fuck. That's a 25-year career.
Yeah. And, hey, Angus didn't need that. When he was a little man, he didn't have any makeup.
No.
It was just him in a suit. So.
No, I mean, he freaking rocked that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, he made that movie.
Yeah. So, next topic.
I think it's Steph. Steph, have you asked the question yet?
No, I haven't. What do y'all think about Rob Zombie directing the new Halloween film?
Oh, okay. Butcher can go if you want to.
Okay. I thought, this is my first thought when I heard you guys announce that a couple weeks ago. I said, thank fucking God. And I know Uncle Bill, I remember you saying, like, you know, like, based on his previous work, I'm not really sure that was the best guy. But, I mean, his previous, like, you wouldn't think that, but I think those are his movies, and he wanted to make those, you know, his. Exactly what he wanted to do. I think he's smart enough. I mean, the guy's a fucking horror fan, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
And I think he's smart enough to look at the whole series and respect, you know, all of the, I mean, Halloween is, you know, it's sacred. And I think he's going to pull through and make a really good movie. I think it's going to be a lot darker, maybe a little more gore, you know, and I think it's going to rock it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, somebody said to me, and this kind of made me change my mind a little bit, they said that the film is going to get made no matter what. Yeah, but that was said by somebody before you.
Anyway,
the film was going to get made no matter what, so why not, you know, have him do it, which is a good point. But I still don't think that that's his type of film at all from the work he's done so far. But if you're going to have somebody like Paul W.S. Anderson or somebody, one of those asshole directors, get involved, it's best that it be him at least.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I think it's safe if he has Final Cut. Like, I can't see why they would give Rob Zombie a Halloween movie and watch over his shoulder and fuck with his, you know, timeline, budget. I mean, wouldn't you assume that they're just gonna give him, like, you know, fucking $5 million, go make a movie, come back in 4 months? Do you think that's what they're gonna do?
I doubt it. With this movie that big, with that much on the line, I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
That's what they did with Devil's
Rejects,
but I don't think they're
going to
do
that. Yeah, the Halloween franchise always gets at least, you know, what is it, 12 to 15 million for a movie. I think the
That's
last
sad,
one.
That's sad, considering the last fucking Halloween movie.
Yeah, that was horrible. See, yeah, that's what I was mentioning before on the show, though, but, you know, the Halloween franchise is dead right now. The last movie was a failure, and it flopped, and it's better to just, I guess, redo it.
No, you're absolutely
start
right.
Start from the beginning again, because, you know, nobody cares about that. But I think he's a good choice, because I think that if you look at the style from House of Thousand Corpses to The Devil's Rejects, how do you know what style he has? Those are completely different movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I can tell you the style that he followed through both of those films was like exploitation slash grindhouse.
I'm talking about cinematography and just
that's what I'm talking about. He kept the same style for both those movies in that regard. The first movie, it looked like he didn't know what the hell he was doing for the last hour.
He didn't keep the same cinematography at all.
Well, yeah, in a lot of ways he did. He kept it grainy and he kept it, you know, with the realism and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he also changed the whole feel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, he took out all of Baby's Giggles.
Yeah.
You know, I think he just
had more characters more than he did the style of the film, I think. I'll tell you something else, though, about that whole story that got to me was the fact that he had said sometime before that he never would do a remake because he thought they were silly, or he would never do any kind of reimagining or any remake or anything like that.
They are silly.
Yeah. So that's one thing that bothered me about the whole story, too.
Yeah, but then, you know, you say that, and then Halloween falls on your lap.
The only thing that I'm worried about is he's just, you know, getting a payday from it. Before, he didn't seem to care about slasher movies in general, let alone Halloween. I never heard him mention it or anything. Anyway, if he wanted to do a slasher movie, he created a ton of great characters in those first two movies. Why couldn't he just create a good, you know, slasher character if he just wanted to do a slasher movie and build, you know, it seemed to make more sense to me.
So you guys don't think it's going to be good?
I think it'll be good, actually.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but I hope to God it is, because, like, I'd say his career probably rides on whether that movie does well or not.
What do you think, Stephanie, though? You think it'll be, you know, a good flick?
Yeah, I think it's going to be good, just as long as he can keep Myers similar to the same way he's always been. Because he can either make it good or he can make it really bad.
Yeah. House of Thousand Corpses, we really didn't like that. thought he improved a lot in Devil's Rejects, so maybe he'll improve even more for Halloween, who knows.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you're right. I think he made a drastic change. I mean, I like Corpses. I didn't find it annoying or anything. I didn't think it was great, but...
Well, I just felt towards the end it fell apart. He didn't know where he wanted to go with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with the... Doesn't some guy pop up in the backseat, and it's like, oh, he's still alive.
I'm talking about, you know, when
the whole final act.
The catacombs underground, and they get those muddy zombies and stuff. That just completely went opposite of everything else in the movie, it seemed like.
Yeah, it felt like a different movie, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I guess we can move on.
Yeah, Uncle Bill, I guess, is next.
All right, next question. If you could redo your favorite horror film, what would you change and why? There's usually a couple of things that glare out about your favorite horror film because you've seen it so many times.
Actually... I fucking got the answer. It would be Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
Directed by Alex Aja. Because I think that movie updated was awesome. But I mean, it has to be dark. You know, it has to even go darker than the original. But I think the acting in Nightmare was really sketchy, especially the mom, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a director like Aja could totally remake that movie and have it be better. I mean, the story is awesome, so I wouldn't touch that, but maybe, you know, better special effects, better nightmare sequences, more blood.
Yeah, I'll see where you're going with it. Stephanie?
Well, my favorite horror movies is Friday 13th, and there's really not anything that I would like to change about that, except for maybe if they could have had Jason be in Part 5. The ambulance driver. Because I think that would have made that better.
That's a big sore point with Friday fans, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that would, all the Friday 13th fans wouldn't be complaining after that, I bet. I love that movie.
No.
You know what I'm saying? And it just seems that's the only complaint, and it's a perfect slasher movie besides that. You know? So I got it.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite Friday the 13th. Because it has all the great ailments in it, you know, that you need in the slasher.
Yeah, that when that fat dude gets axed, that's awesome. you know, fucking handbar all the time.
How about Newman singing on the shitter with his girlfriend? It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, that's a great part.
Newman! Hey, Newman!
If that's the way you feel about it, Dick, fine. But I think you're way out of line.
Ah! And then you got Edward Jr., the two best characters ever in Friday the 13th.
That's true.
How did Part 5 end?
He fell off of a barn roof and lay on a bunch of spikes, and that knocked his mask off, and that's how they knew that.
Right. Oh, my God, it's not Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that guy was like, wow. But they gave you the clue through the whole movie because of the bootstraps. It's kind of a clue. You know, when you pay attention, you can see, like, him standing in certain spots, you know, like Jason would stand. So that kind of gave it away, too.
Yeah, did y'all ever notice on the Part 5 mask that it's shaped like a Roman numeral 5, the triangles?
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Only you were crazy enough to figure that out,
I'm saying...
No, it has triangles, right?
Yeah, it's a completely different like look than all the other.
No, I remember that now, but I hadn't thought about that in 20 years.
Yeah, I'm sort of like her though. I mean, my favorite movie of all time is Halloween, and I couldn't think of anything to change from it. Really, I might put some more gore in it or something. But it's already perfect to me.
Well, they could have done something different with the masks they use in 4 and 5, because I think those masks are just horrible.
Yeah, when you talk about the series, the mask, for some reason they didn't use, they used a different mask after like Part 2.
Yeah,
I thought it looked really bad. So maybe Rob Zombie, though, he'll go back to the Shatner mask.
Yeah, what's he going to do with the mask?
I'm going to be completely redesigned somehow. I just really do.
The original mask for Halloween was supposed to be a clown mask. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm not. He's in a documentary somewhere or something. And,
I think that was fucking magic, that whole math.
Oh, yeah.
It's just one of those things that they just kind of grabbed math and fucked with it, and it worked out, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why they feel the need to change it, you know, like in part four and on, they changed it, so.
Well, they do that with all those movies. It's like, you know, Leatherface, he always has to have a new, I mean, you look at Jason, the guy's fucking metal at this point, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's cool, man, just leave him the way he is.
I suppose, though, to answer my own question, Dawn of the Dead is my favorite horror film. And the only thing I would change about that movie is I'd probably give Tom Savini's character a little bit longer, you know, screen time, because I thought it was a really cool character. And maybe make the blood look just a tad bit more realistic, because everybody bitches about how it looked like paint. You know, I kind of think that adds to the charm of the film, but those are just two things I would change.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
The second freaking topic that my MySpace friends came up with was Asian cinema.
Oh, no.
No.
I'll leave it at that. Thoughts? All right, well, why don't I go ahead?
Okay, you just wanted in general what we think of Asian cinema.
Well, okay, here's why I like it, and then you can, you know, comment on whatever, because, you know, like the past couple shows, I'm listening and I'm like, oh, God, because you guys keep saying, you know, what do you guys like about this? When I watch, like, okay, say Maribito, you guys just watch that, so we can reference that one.
Right.
I just, first of all, it's very atmospheric, which pretty much, you know, it's like everybody knows, like, that's what you get when you, you know, rent an Asian film. I guess on a technical level, the films are great. Like, Three Extremes was, you know, three short films. And those guys put as much time into the sound design, camera work, acting. You know, they're just far superior for me when it comes to American cinema, for the most part. But what I like best is it sucks you in. And then, granted, it's a slow ride. No fucking argument there.
Yeah.
But at the end, it just really seems rewarding. Like, I feel like I've experienced something as opposed to just kind of watching like a slasher, you know, type film. And, I mean, there's no nudity. I don't think there's much gore at all in these movies. But I just feel like it's definitely meat, you know. And not everything's spelled out. I mean, some movies, I just watched, freaking Tartan's gonna kill me here, but I hated Unborn, but Not Forgotten, like that. I mean, it ends, and you have, like, it just didn't make any sense. Like, you just have no fucking clue what happened. And it's not like it's a smart movie. They just didn't know what they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, Maribito, it ends, and you can kind of conclude, you know, it's not all spelled out, but you can understand, you know, the guy's descent into whatever, his little creepy world, this madness, whatever. And there's a lot more underlining themes going on. They always spell it out. You kind of left to put pieces together, which actually most of the time makes sense. Like if you kind of look around online and talk to people about the film. So I mean, it's just a superior experience for me. But there's even this bad Asian cinema. But I mean, I think the really good stuff is really good. So there's my fucking piece.
Well, I want to be really honest.
Bring it on.
I've never seen an Asian horror film that I thought was impressive. Ever.
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen a few that I think are have good moments in it, but I don't even like the ones that Uncle Bill likes. I mean, I like certain parts of it, but I don't know, man. I've never seen one that really grabbed me and said, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I watched The Booth. Have you seen that?
No, actually, it's in my stack. It's next.
Okay, I like that a lot better than Maribito because it didn't rely a lot on atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like that one did. It had more, you could tell what was going on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I haven't seen enough of them, though, to really even talk about them. The ones that I've seen didn't really impress me much, honestly.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it, too.
Which ones do you like, Uncle Bill?
Okay, well, here's my thoughts on Asian cinema. To me, it's a matter of taste, because there are people that like American horror films and people that swear by Italian horror films. There's some people that won't watch anything but Hammer, you know, the British horror films. So it's all a matter of taste. It's all just a matter of taste anyway, no matter how you look at it.
No, you're absolutely right.
But there are two schools of Asian horror to me.
there's the people that make the shit like Stacy and Junk and, you know, Battle Royale, and then there's the people that make stuff like The Grudge and Ringu and whatever The Grudge was called, you know, and Mario. I hate the latter ones. I hate films like Ringu and Grudge, but I actually, because I like American trashy kind of cinema, I do like the Stacy films and, you know, the ones like that, just because that's how I roll.
I fucking love that line. No, I mean, it's not for everybody. There's no question there. I mean, you guys know, we watch, like, what, 10 movies a week?
Yeah.
You know, 5 to 10?
No, I don't
watch it. It's freaking nice to sit back and watch.
I really
don't. Anyway, that's just how I feel. It's refreshing to have to think sometimes, you know. I mean, trust me, I fucking love the trash, the gore. If the story's not fucking good, then you better show me some, you know, whatever, intestines or tits, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just entertain me, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we want. I know I can speak for Uncle Bill, just to be entertained. You know, if something's entertaining, we'll like it. That's what I'll do.
Well, what would y'all rather see come out next? Like a Freddy vs. Jason Part 2? Or like another series to Friday 13th? Well,
I think what we're going to get is a remake, reimagining, or whatever they're calling it. I think that's what's going to come out, but I really think they should go with Freddy vs. Jason 2.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was the highest grossing Friday ever, you know. I think it made like $32 million over the weekend, something like that.
That movie made a lot of fucking money.
So, yeah, it makes sense. Why don't they just go ahead and do a sequel?
Yeah, because a remake is definitely not a good idea. Oh, a prequel, I'm sorry. A prequel is definitely not a good idea.
Whatever it's going to be. I don't think they know yet exactly.
Mm-mm.
Reimagining, whatever that is.
I think at this point, man, it's freaking tough to make the next installment of these series. I mean, what the fuck, Jason? What the, like, okay, so that ended off with Jason falling from space. He lost his mask and fell into a lake or something. Oh, no, the mask fell into a lake or something?
That was Jason X.
I mean, I think I have Jason, like, Metal Jason on a lake. I mean, you know, like, just, I don't know. I mean, I guess either make a Freddy vs. Jason 2 with maybe some more gore, you know, like, please the people that are going to see the movie, you know.
Yeah.
I hate that shit when they have these movies that have been going on for 20 years, and, like we're the target audience, everybody on the phone call. I mean, I'll go see those movies in a fucking wheelchair. I don't care where the people are.
Yeah.
So it's like, just give us the gore and stop trying to, like, make, like, new fans.
Yeah, I think what they're worried about more is that people care about a story in these movies. Friday the 13th movies was never about a story. Okay? Slasher movies aren't about a story. You know, it's just basic. You got to come up with cool ways to kill people. You got to have some cool weapons in there, and that's it.
Yeah.
Have a good killer, and Jason is it. You know.
You're absolutely right, man. Just bring the fucker back to the camp.
Yes.
And have more. Have a fucking bus stroll in, and you meet all these little kids who are going to get killed off one by one in 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, they could do it like they did in the 80s. Churn them out every year, and people would go see it. Guaranteed.
Yep. Well, there's four people right here, right?
Yeah. So what do you think, Stephen? I know I interrupted you there.
Well, I like the idea of just bringing him back in the camp and just forgetting about that outer space stuff.
Yeah.
And just having him back in the camp, like he said a minute ago. Just bringing some kids in and just no story, just flashing.
I'd much rather have a straight-up sequel of some kind and just, yeah, completely forget that Jason X ever happened, and they've done it before. I mean, they forgot Part 4 ever happened.
Really forget that Freddy vs. Jason ever happened.
Yeah, just exactly what you said. Just bring them back, act the shit out of them, that'd be it. I mean, that's great stuff.
That's his story, though.
That's
who he is.
That's 80s gold right there.
Yeah.
It would be cool if they made a new one with the same, like, film stock, you know, and the same type of, like, campy acting, and, you know, purposely throw back to the original films as opposed to, you know, trying to make something better and new, whatever. That'd be cool just to go ahead and fucking make it look just like the other ones.
Yeah, and if you notice, when they stuck to that formula from 1 to Part 7, everybody loves all those movies pretty much. when they went away from that, went to Manhattan, Jason went to Manhattan, then Jason went to hell, then Jason went to space, then Jason fought Freddy. You know, they kept trying to think that it needed something else. I just never thought it did.
No, it didn't.
I mean, fucking space?
Yeah, that's a death knell for every franchise, isn't it?
I don't get that meaning. Like, you know, a couple of guys are hanging out talking about the next film, and someone throws out space.
Yeah.
And Sean Cunningham's like, that's a great fucking idea. I mean, okay, Jason X, sure, like, people like that movie. Like, there's some cool death scenes.
In defense of that movie, though, because
yeah.
I read the Crystal Lake Memories book, I know that they pretty much destroyed the original script of that movie. It was originally supposed to be a comedy, pretty much.
That would have been awesome.
The original, I think Todd Farmer wrote it. They didn't want, you know, they wanted it completely new, and, you know, it just didn't work out like that. They made a lot of changes to the script, and it just ended up being a real turd of a movie.
And I bet that original script was awesome. You know, like, that, the fucking writer sitting there, like, crying, like, you guys, it's probably the writer who gets the whole thing, you know? Like, he's in space, but, you know, let's make it funny and all this shit, and then, I'm sorry, but, like, Sean Cunningham, like, those guys just...
You've got these young writers, and they probably know what's funny and know what would, you know, interest younger people. And then you have Sean Cunningham, who's 60 years old, who probably, you know, would think laughing is funny still or something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just like you had your moment, man. Like
he's lost touch on society, what they would like, you know.
But you know, I would much rather. I'd much rather watch any of those guys, and I know that that's old school or whatever, than I would some of these new guys any day, really.
Don't say it, Uncle Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you fucking say it!
Well, hey.
Oh, no!
Yeah, because you... I'm not going to bring him up this time. I'm talking about him enough. Next
topic. All right, talking about topic.
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick. And I've thought of this for a while now. Do you think a lot of the mainstream magazines, and I mean Fangoria by this, are more part of the problem than they are, you know, a solution?
Well, what's the problem, Creepy?
Well, the problem is, anything that has enough money behind it already, okay, that doesn't need any help. They push... Cry Wolf was on the freaking cover. Hills Have Eyes remake was on the cover. All I'm saying is they never give anybody that needs help the help they should have, I think.
Yeah, man. No, I couldn't agree with you more. It's a fucking business, dude. You know, like, if they slap on Hills Have Eyes, you know, like my fucking dad might buy it. You know what I mean? If they put on, like, Nightmare Man, which I haven't seen yet, by the way, at the screener, I just got in today, and I'm freaking psyched. Yeah. But if they put a movie like that on the cover, I just don't think they're going to... I mean, I'm telling you, like we said earlier, there's a lot more of those people out there.
Well, I'll be honest with you, okay?
Yeah.
When I was a kid and used to get Fangorias, I didn't know what the hell was on the cover. It was a gore pick from some movie. And that would... You see, they could get an independent movie with a gore pick or something on the front of it. I think that would sell. Of course, I don't know if society would, like, accept that now. But.
I can't rock and buy another one and see some fucking guts hanging out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's why we have... No, you're right, man. Like, you know, I was reading that magazine, like, last month, I think I read a comment on... Some guy writes in, he's like, why the fuck do you guys promote all these shitty movies, like When a Stranger Calls and The Fog?
Cry Wolf was probably one of the worst movies they ever gave a cover to.
Yeah, that movie.
I actually had that.
That was annoying. You know what I fucking hated? Like, if you didn't like the characters, forget it. Like, it was all, like, the little game and the little banter and,
right.
You know, like, who's the fucking wolf or whatever. It was more like a thriller, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, did anybody actually die? Does Bon Jovi die?
Yeah, that's the best part, too, by the way.
Ride, cowboy, ride. You know that song?
Don't quit your day job, buddy.
Fucking Bon Jovi. Woo! So what was the question? Oh yes, yeah, dude, that's why they fucking sell out, man. They're corporate. It's like what you were saying a couple episodes ago, man. Bloody disgusting. Those guys. It's people like us who need to fucking support, you know, the smaller guys. And there's an audience for that shit too. You know, I mean, like we were saying, the whole remake thing. You know, like the younger kids going to the theater. There's a whole subculture there, and I think, like you said, more horror sites are popping up, and it's a whole subculture. And what's that magazine you guys recommended to me? The Penny Blood. That's a really cool magazine. You know, we have shit like that to read.
Ultraviolence, another pretty good.
I haven't got that one yet.
Well, alright. Fangoria, Bloody Disgusting, and a lot of those other sites, including Gore Zone and other sites like that. And I'll talk about Fangoria too. They just, at some point in time, they went from being like independent and actually trying to help out people make movies to being just like another big conglomerate where they don't really support anything that doesn't put like a ton of money behind them. And unless they're friends with them or they view them as competition or anything like that, like sites like ours, it would take years for us to be able to even get on Fangoria, and we'd have something spectacular.
Unless you want to pay them.
Yeah, unless you want to pay them money, and then you can do it. But they're not really trying to help out anybody anymore. And the shit they're promoting is hurting horror more than it is helping it. So you talk about these movies they had on there. You know, they had Silent Hill on the cover. This was only a couple months ago. Yeah. Just the god-awfulest array of shit. Just because they get paid the most money to put that on there. It doesn't have anything to do with the film or whether or not they like the film. I think they can just be bought. That's what I hate most about them. They can be bought easily.
I think that's absolutely true.
I was going to say that to me it just seems like they're just putting out what's popular and just what's coming out because that's what people want, the younger people, and, you know, they're just not giving the classics the recognition that they should have because they just want to put out what's popular for everybody else.
Exactly. They built their whole reputation on those films, and now they want to act like they never fucking existed.
Is people running Fangoria? Has the staff changed? You know, like the higher ups or anything?
Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone is the editor in chief. And that guy's been there for what? For 17 years.
He's been there for a while.
And you know what else annoys? If you go to like Arrow in the Head, I go there often to find out news and shit. But like, you go there and there is ads everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like shit popping up. There's Google ads, and like if you read reviews, there's Google ads in the review. There's like cell phone ads, Xbox ads. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I understand you want to make money, but like, how much do you have to sell out?
Think of it like this, too. Going back to Fangoria, if you buy one of their magazines now, look at all the ads that's in those magazines. The majority of it is ads.
It's half the bucks for ads. It's half the fucking magazine.
Yeah.
It's like Oprah, like her fucking magazine.
I hope you don't buy that.
Yeah.
Every month, baby.
But the thing about it is, I think that just exactly what CK said, that if they just put a gore shot on that magazine and it was of an independent movie that they actually, like, agreed on, the reviewers agreed on was a good film, that they can help somebody out immensely and could probably help the whole horror industry out. But they won't do that. I mean, they won't. It's all about the money.
Because the independent people don't have the money.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, this whole ball is rolling, and it's like a huge fucking boulder, man, and it's done. I mean, like, they're going to, you know, all these movies are going to come out, you know, the remakes. You know what scares me is when the fucking remakes are going to get sequels, and the sequels are going to get shittier and shittier.
Yeah.
I mean, this could take, like, 10 years, you know what I mean?
That Return to House on Haunted Hill, there you go. It's a sequel of a remake. Exactly what it is.
Yeah, I'll tell you though, I mean, it even goes to the websites too, because, you know, we did an interview for Bloody Disgusting a few months ago, and we never mentioned it on the show, but I guess we will now. we was wondering what happened, and I think Scott Goldberg did the interview, was going to be credited as the interviewer. So, you know, we emailed Brad, who is the Bloody Disgusting, you know, douche cock master, whatever. And he said, you know, I'm going to wait until these guys get a little bit bigger before I print the interview.
Did he say that?
Yeah. Yeah, he literally told us that. So that tells you where...
What an asshole!
Yeah, no shit, I told him
that. Well, I mean, like, how the fuck are you going to get bigger if you sites don't fucking promote you.
That's right. That's what we're saying. That's why I keep saying that those sites don't give a shit about the fans or anybody else trying to do anything, because they only promote things that are already established.
Yep.
They will not help anybody, you know, that's trying to up and come and do anything at all.
Yeah, another thing, too, I hate about Blood Discussion because they do this. Every time a new movie comes out, they try to have the director or a star for the movie. Is it just, why would anybody care about, you know, oh, it opens this weekend so you can read the interview with Gregory Dark, who directed See No Evil.
Right. I bet there's a lot of fucking people who care. And this fucking chick emailed me in MySpace raving about See No Evil.
Well, I'm not talking about the movie. I'm just saying, I don't understand why they have to, it's annoying to me that they have the director or the star of the movie the weekend it comes out. Who cares?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's all fucking timing, you know?
I mean, we're fans of the people we interview. We don't interview them just because it's good timing for something to, you know, come out in theaters or something. I think that's gay.
Well, it's because we're fucking horror fans, you know? But, you know, I mean, like, at least they could put, like a page where you could just, like a bulletin board for users, you know, like just put like a page where you could go, like, you know, promote your little film. I mean, like, what do they care if they have a page where they just post a user comment to promote some low budget film or some site? I don't understand, like, what's wrong with that.
I can't stand message boards that do that shit either, that kick you off for posting anything on there.
Yeah.
And there's tons of them that do that, too. And then they have that little space that says, you know, you can advertise here for free that nobody ever fucking goes on, so it doesn't help anyway. But, yeah, I can't stand that type of stuff either. But I guess to try to get off bitching for a second, because we've been doing that since.
We're going to talk about Eli Ross now?
No.
Hello!
We're really not going to talk about him.
My third question is, do you think Eli Roth can save horror?
Oh, you mean from being good?
Yeah, for the listeners who don't know, yeah, I'm definitely an Eli Roth fan. So, you know, these guys, you know, we go back and forth sometimes and have a good time. No, it's just, though, he's God. So anyway, so we should move on.
Yeah, that's
true. No, I'm just fucking with you guys. No, I don't think Eli is the answer to horror. I just enjoy his films, but, you know. But we should get off that, because we'll be here until...
Yeah, that would really take forever, like, hell and everything. We have to go on about that. I just wanted to ask one last question to everybody to kind of end things. This is, it's not like any kind of politics behind or anything, but I was just curious. A lot of people say that horror films nowadays aren't scary at all, and people have been desensitized and what have you, but I'm just wondering, what horror films can you remember specifically that scared you when you saw them, that honestly frightened you?
Steph, do you want to go ahead?
Okay, Candyman. I thought Candyman was kind of scary. That's the only movie I could probably say that somewhat scared me. Mm-hmm. I don't normally get scared of too many horror movies because I've grown up watching them forever, but that was one that I just didn't really like because it was just kind of on the freakier side.
It's funny, I remember, I worked at Blockbuster, 7 years ago, and this lady comes in up to the counter, and she's like, have you seen Candyman? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, my daughter just watched that at a sleepover party, and she won't sleep. And I said, oh, like, you've got a fucking problem. Like, that's a, you know, imagine that, like, when you're, like, 8, and then you go to the bathroom or something like that, into the mirror.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's a good fucking movie.
Yeah, it is. And I can understand how that would actually scare the shit out of somebody.
Well, Uncle Bill, are you talking like...
Just a film that actually... Because there's very few that actually bother me. Like, on a visceral kind of level when I watch it. So I'm talking about, like, you know, in that regard.
Alright, well, I would say, like, The Changeling really creeped me out. Like, I don't like kids in horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And... like, there's a couple shots in there when the camera floats through the hallways and shit. That movie was, I think that's a generally scary movie. But on a different level, I guess Underground really fucking bothered me.
I have to say I completely agree with that, too, because that's one movie that just absolutely went all the way it could possibly go. And I think what made that movie work as much as it did was the effects. They don't look staged at all. There's
no, unbelievable effects. Yeah. Like, I don't know why those guys, like, that's not their bread and butter.
And not just that, too, but also the kind of degradation shit in that movie is just way over the top. The vomiting and all that stuff on people is just...
Yeah, it's I get the movie, somebody recommended it to me, and I'm like, okay, you know, they're like, just so you know, this is really fucked. So I put it in, and I was really defensive, like, expecting, like, a horror movie. And the first time I put it through, it didn't bother me that much, but I watched it again the next day, and I decided to just kind of, like, open up and not be so defensive and kind of invest, because I think I didn't emotionally invest in the characters, because I didn't want it to bother me that much. But, like, if you just... let go and just go for the ride, man. Like, that fucking film is. Because I was watching it, and I couldn't help picture people that I cared about. Like, what if they were in that situation?
Exactly, yeah.
And you know, it's just like. It's almost
too damn real.
Well, it's the thing. It's like, you know, like, do you even want to go there? You know?
Yeah. And they did, and they made a shitload of money doing it, though.
Yeah. So, those are my two.
Okay. The Shining is one that I've thought of. And that seems to be the only movie that... It's not really... There's nothing in it that would frighten... That should frighten you. It's just the great atmosphere. And I thought the music was really cool in it. I thought Jack Nicholson did a damn good job of a crazy son of a bitch in that movie, too. But a movie that is disturbing, I would say, would be Cannibal Holocaust. I don't know if you all have seen that one.
No, I really haven't had the pleasure, but but I plan to. Like, I heard a lot of shit about, you know, since I've been talking about horror movies to everybody lately. That's the film to see, I guess.
It's not scary, but as you watched it, you're like, how in the hell did somebody make a movie like this?
Yeah.
Seriously, people talk about Ruggiero Deodato like he's a crazy son of a bitch, and I'm sure he is. But he made a movie that is so realistic even this day, because he went to court over some parts of the movie. He thought, the court thought that he really killed people in the movie and stuff.
From what I hear, that's what it looks like, right? I mean, is it true? Is it fucking true that animals really died in that movie?
Yep.
No shit, huh?
Man, you're like, why would somebody do that? Seriously. I just can't understand somebody. I mean, you could easily do that with, effects and stuff, what they did.
Yeah.
Because they killed they killed like a big turtle that was in a river there, and they killed like a pig, and they killed a couple of monkeys. Yeah. And that's real, man. That's disturbing as hell, I thought.
Do those scenes revolve around, like, another similar film is Cannibal Ferox?
Yeah.
And I think they kill stuff in that, but it's kind of like a tribe that does it. Is it some kind of ritualistic thing that they do in the movie?
No,
it's just for fucking whatever.
The filmmakers who are really supposed to be the real savages in the movie.
Yeah,
it's sort of you'll have to see it. It's awesome.
Yeah,
but they kill everything. They kill the pig, they kill the turtle, and they kill the monkey. So,
wow, I can't even believe they were allowed to do that.
Yeah, I think it was. Before time that, they got PETA and all that stuff now that,
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean,
can you imagine filming that shit today?
I mean, they filmed it in the Amazon, actually.
Yeah, this is...
But it was an Italian crew, so... Yeah, even the actors that are in it, they're ashamed of it. I mean, to this day, they interview them on that disc, on the two-disc set that's out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that movie is truly disturbing, and I'll never forget the first time I watched it.
How old were you, just out of curiosity?
Actually,
like
that was like the third DVD I ever bought. I was 20 years old, so that's been 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, in Kentucky, you're not going to find a movie like that unless you order it off the internet.
I fucking believe that.
It's not going to be a movie gallery.
You might live a movie like that.
Yeah, you can live a movie like that here.
For me, I don't know. I've seen all those splatter and gore films so much that kind of shit really doesn't bother me like the films that I'm going to talk about, though. For me, it was City of the Living Dead, just because the opening sequence in that film has to be one of the most disturbing sequences ever, and it's not that gory at all. It's not even gory, really. It's where a priest ha- hangs himself, and then that brings the dead supposedly back to life and opens the gates of hell or whatever.
Yeah.
Just that whole idea of the imagery behind that, you know.
Too.
Yeah, and the music adding to everything like that. It was so disturbing to me, and I watched that. That's only been like 3 or 4 years ago. And it just, the visuals in that movie creep you out, like when her eyes, he looks at her and her eyes start to bleed.
Well, first of all, you know, it's grainy, you know, and it has, the priest is fucking perfect for the part.
Yeah.
And it's a cemetery, and the music is like, right? Like, it's just like a pounding.
It's like, bass drum and a bass, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's fucking very, very awesome. And then when she fucking pukes her intestines, the whole, and the drill of the head, I see that.
And another one, though, and this is kind of funny, because it doesn't really, it's not believable at all, but this is a film that, because of the effects, kind of upset me, because when I watched it, I was a kid, and it looked really, really, like, accurate, was Dead Alive. I mean, I know that the shooting that now is, like, completely over-the-top crazy, but, like, when pulls that guy's rib cage out through his chest and stuff, when I was a kid watching that, I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, a crazy Shudder scene.
Greetings from Tromaville. This is Lloyd Kaufman, president of Troma Entertainment and creator of The Toxic Avenger. When I'm not making those great movies like Tromeo and Juliet and Poultrygeist and Class of Nukem High, I like to kick back and listen to DeadPit.com, because that's what you're listening to right now. It's the best in cyberspace. DeadPit.com. It's Tromatic.
Welcome back to DeadPit.com. And right now, what we're going to do is we're just going to read over a couple of the DVD releases and a couple of screenings from around the country. And so on June 27th, which I believe is next Tuesday, new DVDs that will be coming out will be Joel M. Reed's Bloodbath, which we're actually going to review here on the show.
Yeah, you can see whether you want to buy that one or not.
There's a couple of Masters of Horror DVDs coming out, including a two-pack with Dear Woman and Sick Girl. Dear Woman's John Landis. I think Sick Girl's Lucky McKee's.
Yeah.
And they're both coming out separately, too. The Little Shop of Horrors 1959 Special Edition is coming out, which that might be interesting to some people. There's another film from Subversive Cinema, Shockheaded, which is coming out. And Saw, the Blu-ray edition, is coming out from
Lionsgate.
So if you can't get enough Saw, and you're stupid enough to buy the Blu-ray shit.
If there's anybody out there, real quick, that has either the HD DVD or the Blu-ray machines, email us in and tell us why you bought it, okay? I could understand somebody waiting to see which format's going to succeed, if either of them do, but why buy Blu-ray when you don't know if it's going to, you know, who's going to win out, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. But there's one other film on here I want to mention real quick, because I think that we would... I've never seen it, but I think it would be something right up our alley.
Yeah.
It's called Rock and Roll Nightmare, and that's being released by Synapse.
And Synapse is another one that will not respond to us. We can't get some of their copies of their screener movies. Email Synapse and tell them to send stuff for you guys for deadpit.com.
That's right.
A little bit of rambling going on here.
So what we got for screenings?
We got a couple of screenings. Metropolitan YC that we often talk about. They have a screening of Evil Dead 2, and it's free admission with a one-drink minimum. You can go over to metropolnyc.com for all the other info if you want to go when you're in New York City. Another thing in New York City, I know the Huntington, in Huntington, New York, the Cinema Arts Center is putting on the summer camp of the Horror Film Festival. And this week they have the Midnight Movie Classic. It's not really a horror movie. Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm-hmm. That one's going to be on. And they have stuff running up until Labor Day. Horror movies. So go to summercampcinema.com for more info on that if you're anywhere near Huntington, New York. On that. And we have a couple things we want to mention before we get into the fan mail. the tarot card winners from last week, the Brett Kelly tarot card.
You should be receiving those any day now, actually.
Yeah.
If you're in the U.S., I think there's one person from Canada, which I don't. That takes a little bit longer.
Yeah. If you're didn't receive an email, just keep listening to Dead Pit, because we actually are supposed to get some more tarot cards to give away. We can mention Nick Scipione, John Scott, Grant Forsyth, and Christy Langford were the winners last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations, and thanks for listening to the interview and the show. And we appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you haven't signed up for the big contest drawing, by the way, from Zen and Pictures, you need to do that too. If you don't know how to sign up for it, on the main page, there's a picture of two crazy-looking sons of bitches in the top right-hand corner. You just click on that, and that's all the rules and how to sign up and everything like that.
Yep.
So we're giving away 3 DVDs and a bunch of other Dead Pit memorabilia.
And also what we're going to do, starting this week, starting today, I suppose we can start it, we're going to have a little contest on the message board, and we're going to give away a couple of DVDs that we have from Zen and Pictures. So we're going to do it on the message board, and we're going to do it where everyone has a chance to win. I understand that some people actually listen to the show at an earlier time, and you know, some people actually have jobs and stuff that they have to do.
Yeah.
So we're going to give everybody a chance to win this time.
You have a chance to win 2 DVDs.
Yeah.
Which are can either be, you know, we'll mix and match somewhere or another. It'll either be, you know, Blood Ranch, Reality Kills,
or Headhunter.
Yeah, or Headhunter. It'll
be 2 of those 3.
Yeah.
We can't tell you what 2 because, you know, who cares?
Yeah. They're all great.
So, yeah, go on the message board. If you haven't signed up yet, we're going to have a little contest. It's going to be something trivia related, but, you know, it's not going to be the first person that answers that's going to win. We're going to try to do something a little different, hopefully.
And give everybody an equal chance here. That's what we're trying to do. Because we're all about equality for the fans.
Yeah. We have some special birthday announcements, though.
That's right.
That we want to get to. We want to wish the Flying Hawaiian happy 30th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
We want to mention our good friend Scott Goldberg happy 15th birthday.
And I want to wish Midnight Angel on the board happy 28th birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Suck the fuck till the fuck sucks you. Happy birthday to you.
Suck on it.
There you go. So, we got any more announcements?
Nope, I think that's it.
Well, the announcement for next week, we might as well talk about it.
Yeah, if you want to, we can. Except I don't even care.
We have the best of the bad.
Yep.
Which is the best bad movies, horror movies, of all time.
And you know these type of films. They're the type of horror films where they're so bad that they're great. And you can just watch them over and over again.
They're creamy good fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go through, I guess, the top 10.
Yeah, we'll pick 10 from all the different decades that we think deserve to be the best of the worst, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's going to be a real fun show, and we're looking forward to doing it. But 2 weeks from tonight, we have probably, if not our number one, definitely in our top 2 or 3 requested guests of all time.
That's true. And it goes right along with our summer of independence promotion. This guy may very well be one of the biggest independent, you know, directors,
filmmakers
of all time.
And of course, you all heard a little promo as we were coming back from the break. The guy is the leader of Troma Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
He goes by the name of
Lloyd the Hitman Kaufman.
Or Uncle Lloydy.
Uh-huh. He's not only responsible for directing films like The Toxic Avenger and, you know, along with Michael Hertz, but he's also distributed tons of films like Bloodsucking Freaks and
Mother's Day.
Yeah, just all kinds of great classics.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to him on July 7th. That's a couple of weeks from now. And that's actually when we're giving away our big Zenon Films package.
Where everyone has a chance to win three DVDs, a mini poster, and some exclusive Dead Pit memorabilia.
Yeah, and you can go on our website for all the info that you need on that.
So I guess we should just probably go to the fan portion of the show.
We got a lot of fan stuff to talk about, as always. We have a good portion of questions here.
Yeah, the fans seem to like us.
So what you got?
Well, this comes to us from Magic Fan 768 Niner Roger. Just got done watching Inside the Actor Studio, and they had Dave Chappelle, and it got me thinking, would he ever have someone from the horror genre on that show? Well, if y'all could have anyone on that show interviewed, whom would it be and why? And even better than that, whom would y'all like to interview the most, alive or dead? Okay, well, for me, to answer the second part of the question, who I'd like to interview most alive would probably actually be Romero, just because I'm a huge fan of all those films.
I would have to say John Carpenter.
Yeah. Now, dead, I would probably pick Hitchcock. That'd be a hell of an interesting interview.
Good evening. Okay, dead, let's see. I don't know, I'd have to say Vincent Price.
Yeah, he'd be a killer interview.
How awesome would that be?
And let's see, the first part of the question was, whom would we like to have on a show like Inside the Actor Studio?
I would love to see a show, I just mentioned him, John Carpenter, with him.
Yeah.
I think he would probably be the most likely candidate for that.
Yeah, there's not, see, horror genre doesn't get a lot of respect, so there's not really a chance of him ever having anybody just directly related to the horror genre on that show.
And that's sort of fucked up, but, you know. I mean, he'll have Harrison Ford on there a dozen times before he'd have anybody like John Carpenter or Wes Craven.
I think a person that has, like, done films that are completely revolutionary, though, that he could have on there would be Argento. I mean, the guy, he could have a translator.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really speak English.
But seriously, out of, like, all the people that do horror films, his is probably the most unique, I'd say.
Yeah. But, I mean, Inside the Actor Studio is a great show. I mean, it's addicting. If you see it on, you have to watch it, no matter who's on it.
Yeah, it is. I watched one with Tom Hanks the other day.
I've seen one with Robin Williams.
Yeah. Right, anyway, what we got next?
Okay. We got something from Mr. Blonde 2006. He was just wondering why Jennifer Aniston tried to sue while making The Leprechaun. And it seems like I've heard something about this before.
I think it has something to do with cover art, doesn't it? Of the film?
No, does it?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look any info up on it, but I'm guessing why she tried to sue is because she's a bitch. That's just a wild guess.
Yeah.
Because, seriously, you get people like, and they're no better actors. She belonged in Leprechaun, okay? Then once they get lucky and strike a hit like that gay show Friends, they just think that they're a lot better than what they really are. And she's really not, because you can see her trying to act in movies now, and she's just as bad as an actress then as she is now. So,
yeah, I'll have to look that up, though. I never really...
We'll get back to you on that, though, the technical details.
Okay, this comes from Magda Kane, who is one of the few female members of our board.
Yeah.
She says, I listened to your show for the first time today. My boyfriend found your site and put on the show. Great job. I love it. My personal favorite type of movie is horror. I believe I have seen most of the horror that is out there. I know there are a few exceptions, but there can't be many. Horror is the only kind of movie that can be really bad but still enjoyable, which we'll find that out next week. At least that's my opinion. I love them all, the good and the bad and the downright awful. We have a server and a site called www.undeadcal.com.
Okay.
And you should give it a look. It is new, so it's not very busy yet, but both of us are horror fans. So, yeah, everybody check out www.undeadcal.com.
Attack of the Cal Zombies.
Yeah, I was actually on there, and there's all kinds of different, like, sections and links and reviews and interesting things
Thanks for listening to the show. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Personally, thank everybody.
Did we thank anybody?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Rusty, our musical friend up in Canada, I believe, mentioned, since you boys seem to be in the know on this kind of stuff, any word whether or not there'll be an uncut version of My Bloody Valentine ever released on DVD? An old issue of Fangoria ran some pretty brutal money shots from the film, but the scenes were highly cut and edited for both the theatrical and the VHS release here in Canada. Well, I don't know about who owns the Canadian distribution rights, but as far as America goes, I have the DVD from Paramount. Uh-huh. And Paramount is not known for releasing stuff that is uncut.
That's true. The whole Friday the 13th fiasco is proof of that.
Yeah, and they're really not, besides Friday the 13th and a couple of other higher, you know, class movies, higher class is what they would consider higher class, is what I mean. They don't re-release shit either.
Yeah, there's no, I haven't heard anything about that movie being re-released whatsoever.
So, unless they license it out to somebody, I doubt it. Yeah. I doubt it happening.
Paramount is notorious for being dickheads about, you know, distribution and
licensing. And that sucks, too, because, you know, they did all kinds of great slasher movies back in the day with Paramount. I know another one that I don't know if it'll ever get released is The Boogans.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it on, I don't think it was ever released, like, on video, let alone DVD. And it was actually on AMC. Paramount actually released that one, too.
It's
not really a slasher, but, you know, it's around the same time period. It's a funny movie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, though, no. I doubt My Bloody Valentine getting released uncut.
Yeah. So, this comes from Suspiria on the board. What do you two consider the best horror movie of the 21st century so far, and what makes that movie stand out to you from the others?
Oh
shit.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that is tough, actually. There's been a lot of really good movies, but, you know, I don't know if there's one that stands out as, hey, that's the best one I've seen.
Well, there was a lot of really, really good movies that came out in, you know, millennium. There were films like, I know we both really like Joyride.
Yeah, and that seems to be one that, I guess just because of the cast that's in it, people just don't want to give it a chance, but it is a really cool, creepy sort of movie with the same guy. What was the guy's name that did the voice for in Silence of the Lambs?
He didn't do the voice. He was, what was the guy's name?
I know, but he did the Rusty Nail voice.
Yeah, he did the, he was Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. He was in the Hills Have Eyes remake, too. I don't remember that guy's name, but yeah, he's killed. And then you got other stuff like Final Destination, which I thought was just a completely great new spin.
Yeah,
plot-wise on horror movies.
And Lucky McKee's May is another one that's often talked about. Ginger Snaps is another one that's
Canadian.
Talked about.
Now, that was a really good teen horror film that actually wasn't unbearable to watch.
Catherine Isabel. She was awesome in that movie.
But I guess...
Yeah, it was actually... I would have to say Devil's Rejects. It's probably my favorite over the past 6 years, I guess it's been since.
I'd say the 90s. Yeah, mine would probably be High Tension, be like a tie between High Tension and Devil Rodriguez, because they're both equally great movies, but just in completely different ways.
Yeah, but, you know, the new millennium hasn't been that bad. If you actually look at, you know, a lot of the films that was released from 2000 on, there's a lot of pretty good films out there.
Some people seem to like The Ring, although I never...
Yeah, the first one's all right. Yeah. The first one is pretty good, but, you know, don't go anywhere else with it. don't make a part two, but they did, unfortunately.
Yeah, with the CG deers. That's not good.
Yeah. Another one you mentioned, though, before, I've never seen it yet, Session 9, that you said
was
pretty good.
That movie, I think Universal picked that movie up finally, but put it out on DVD, but yeah. It's a great psychological horror movie, anyway.
That's right.
So I guess we should move on.
Yeah, we can go on. We got a letter from our pal Kim in Owensboro.
Mm-hmm.
Who mentioned that the Night of the Living Dead skit that we did on the May 19th show was some of the funniest shit ever. I don't know if you got any feedback on that or not, but I laughed my ass off all the way through it. And she's got in quotations,
"Shut up, you're stupid as shit."
I'd love it if you guys would do some more of those, you know, with different movies. So I think she sort of hinted at doing some on some of our pal Eli Roth's projects. Mm-hmm. But the thing about that is we've only seen Cabin Fever like once and Hostel once. Yeah. So we really don't remember much from it. I mean,
and I'm not going back and having to review the scenes in that film to try to, you know, get it right for that, because I don't care enough about his shit to do that.
Yeah.
But we will definitely be doing more of those.
Yeah, and maybe sooner than later. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Moving along.
Moving onward.
This is probably my favorite question of the week, because I never actually thought about it before, but this comes from Chum.
Chunk?
No, Chum.
Do the truffle shuffle.
Being such big fans of Night of the Creeps, can either of you explain how the tape recorder gets up in the dorm room? Okay, now the scene that I think you're talking about is the scene where one of the...
J.C.
Steve Marshall in the film, gets infected by the slug/alien creatures, and he makes a tape to give to Jason Lively, and it's a tape of basically him telling that he's dying and all this stuff, and he's getting ready to kill himself down in the boiler room. And the question is, how does that tape and the tape recorder get from the boiler room up to the dorm room, you know, if that guy's dead? And the answer to that is, I guess it's just
We can ask our buddy Fred Decker about that, and he'd say, "Oh, you got me."
Yeah, I guess.
You got me!
He probably would, because that's got to be a goof in the film. I could make up something and say, like, somebody...
The slugs carried it up there or something.
Yeah, or somebody found it down there. Of course, they would have had to found the corpse, which they didn't. So there's no possible explanation for it. That's just a goof in the movie.
Yeah, that's a little...
And this is... the second part is, I've wondered, how does Night Gallery, Rod Serling, that's it, that was a series on television, fare with horror fans?
Well, we know that Rod Serling also did The Twilight Zone. He was the narrator in that. I vaguely remember the series. It just seemed like a, you know, updated version of The Twilight Zone, sort of.
It was, really. I mean, it was the same kind of format. He'd come on, you know, before each sketch and after each sketch. And it was just a series kind of like Tales from the Crypt was in the 80s, but predated that.
Yeah, and I missed the hell out of those shows like that. Yeah. I mean, Masters of Horror is the only thing that's halfway like that. You know, now we don't have anything.
I've seen a couple of episodes, because it used to come on Sci-Fi. I don't think it does anymore, but I don't remember that much about it. I remember I liked it, just like I liked Twilight Zone.
I think those are out on DVD, actually.
But I would say that, how does it go over with the horror community, horror fans?
Well, it fits right in with all the other shows.
Yeah, I mean, like, you don't hear it mentioned as much as people mention, like, Twilight Zone or Tales from the Dark Side, but it should be.
It's around the same level as, like, Monsters and the ones like that.
I'd say it might be a little bit better.
Freddy's Nightmares. And
shit, stuff. It's better than Freddy's Nightmares. God, that show. That was wonderful.
Yeah, speaking of which, so I actually watched a Freddy's Nightmares. It's been a couple weeks ago now. And Marissa Hargitay. It was in that episode.
She in Law and Order.
She's actually in Law and Order now. Yeah. But man, she belonged in a horror movie bad back then. She was like the shit. That's all I'm gonna say. Although that episode sucked ass, but I mean, she was hot as hell in it. That made it worth watching.
That's right.
So we got something here from Crawling Chaos, who writes, "Another ass kicking show, 1 hour and 40 minutes no less, and we tried to make it under 2 hours, and I guess we did all right with that last week. What was the song played at the end? Sounds like Gordon Lightfoot or something like that." Well, the song I chose for last week's show was Paul Zaza's The Ballad of Harry Warden, which is actually the closing song from My Bloody Valentine, a movie we just talked about with our good pal Rusty. Well, there you go.
I have a feeling that a lot of people on here are going to enjoy the hell out of the closing song for this show.
That's right. You can get out your Reebok pumps and get you out.
Get out your cardboard slabs.
Yeah, and just go to town with the song we're going to close with. But we'll get to that a little later.
Next question. This is another good one. This comes from, and I said this guy's name wrong last time. I said Poker Face, I think. This guy's actual name on the board is Porker Face.
Come on! Where are you going, city boy? Which is actually pretty good. If done to perfection, which of the following key components to good horror filmmaking could still make for a good movie even when the rest are done to mediocrity? And he's got musical score. I guess what he's saying is, can a musical score make an entire horror film watchable or good?
No.
I don't think so either, because there's been some good musical scores in Italian films, and I thought the films were fucking horrible.
He's talking one thing out of those, out of that list, that would make a good horror film, make or break, right?
Mm-hmm.
Music, no.
Okay, cinematography.
No.
Okay, acting. Can acting save an entire horror film?
Fuck no.
That's true, especially not horror.
No.
I mean, it might be able to save, like, drama or...
But if you're watching a horror movie for acting, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
So, special effects. Now, this is the one I think could be it. There have been tons of movies that I've seen where the only thing going for them were special effects. The acting and all that other shit was horrible. But that actually makes... That can make a horror film. Make or break.
Yeah, definitely.
Key example, The Dead Next Door. Nothing in that movie except the
gore.
Special effects.
Yeah. And really bad gore, but it still worked.
Now, directing.
No. Because you can be the best...
like he said. No!
You can be the best director in the world. If you've got a script to Ghoulies Goes to College, it's still not going to be a great horror movie.
Let me tell you something about directors. I think they're, like, highly overrated, because from what I understand from talking to a lot of actors, at least some directors are anyway, a lot of times directors just kind of fall into parts. They get the right cast, and they don't really even know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
And they just kind of fall into making a great movie just by recording what's going on around them.
Yeah. And you mentioned acting before, though. That's another thing. I think there's a difference between, especially in the horror genre, between having a great cast and having a bunch of great actors. Because if you have a bunch of great characters for the cast to play, they don't have to be good at acting at all.
Well, let's add this to it then. It's not on here, but would you say an ensemble cast of people can make a horror film great? And I would say yes, because I can think of Dawn of the Dead right now.
Yeah.
Of course, that had special effects, a score, and a bunch of other shit. But still, the core cast in that movie were great. Nobody knew who they were. Okay, and last one is writing.
No.
I think so. I think that it would be possible to have a film, because I've actually seen a couple films like that here recently where you don't have really any good acting, any good special effects, or any good anything else except the writing. And I think, you know, that a perfect example of that would be some of those Sub Rosa films where the stuff is just, you know, comical and the dialogue's great, but there's not really anything else. So I think it's possible.
I don't. That's just my opinion. I think, though, like the first two you mentioned, if it has a great music and great cinematography, those two could probably, I'd probably say, if those two were together.
Yeah, well, you can pick any two of these and you can make a great film, but picking one is kind of hard.
Yeah.
Make a whole film around
the gore. Yeah. And did he have titties on there? Because titties would automatically.
He didn't have titties, no.
Well, let's see.
That's where you messed up.
That's another one that would be great. Just have titties in there, and you know, that's all you need. My favorite question of the week comes to us from Sean the Butcher Smithson. And I think him and, what's his name, Greg from Killer Reviews, are going to be battling in the court over the butcher name.
Mm-hmm.
I was until recently a Bay Area metal musician by profession. The band I left was Sangre Eterna. And I did it to pursue a horror variety show for public access television here in the area of Berkeley and San Francisco. My format is short films, interviews, music guests, and trailers, as well as reviews and general insanity. Sounds a little bit like Dead Pit.
Uh-huh.
I have a house band as well. They are Ghoul and are on a label called Razorback Records. Their third album is Splatter Thrash.
That's a nice name.
Which just came out. Imagine Friday the 13th Part 2 meets the Marx Brothers meets Carcass. And you're getting somewhere.
You had me up to a carcass.
He mentions he has interviews with Sid Haig, as well as Tiffany Shepis, Richard Mall, and Ralph Konevsky. for the new Nightmare Man movie, which we've talked about a lot on here. He's had Richard Tyson, Ethan Dittmeyer, who are the star and director of St. John Smith, and a bunch of other shit. I'm just letting you know that I totally dig the Dead Pit. May of the Dead was great and kept me happy throughout my entire birthday month. Thanks. And you guys should make t-shirts if you haven't already. And he wants to know, how'd we start this up?
Okay. The t-shirt question is, we're really trying, and I've been waiting on that for at least a month now, so we'll let you know back on the t-shirts.
Yeah, if you go on deadpit.com's message board, there's a design floating around on that board, and we're hoping to have that done soon. Seriously.
How did we get started? We were bored. That's the best way.
We live in Kentucky, and there's not shit to do around here, unless you want to go hunting or fishing or watching NASCAR races or go to the flea market, which we do sometimes.
Because that's Walmart.
That's the only mall we have is a flea market, folks.
That is like our little outdoor mall. Mm-hmm. I'm so proud. But no, really what it was, I think more than anything, was it was a combination of, we used to always sit around and watch like horror movies. Every Halloween we'd have like horror movie fest where we just watched a ton of horror movies at one time.
It was like 15 last
year. Yeah, over a period of a couple of days leading up to Halloween. And then we started, you know, getting into horror autographs and stuff like that. And it just led to what we're doing now.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically stalkers for a while, finding out where all these people live.
Yeah.
And then we're like, you know, we got all their autographs because we're dorks. We collect everything.
We are, there's no doubt.
I mean, we have autographed photos, autographed posters. I'd say between Uncle Bill and myself, we probably have about 100 full-size movie posters.
I'd say you're probably right. I just got another one today, by the way. I didn't tell you that yet.
What is it?
Nightmare on the Street 4. You already got that one, huh?
I got it. But anyway, we started this show because it was just something else we could do for the horror genre. It was some other addiction, I guess.
Got one more piece of fan mail here. This comes to us from Pogo the Clown.
All right, Pogo.
Which is actually John Wayne Gacy's alter ego, for those of you who didn't know that. Here's a question for you. I haven't got around to listening to all the shows yet, and I don't recall you talking about this, and I don't think we have, but if we have, please feel free to ridicule him mercilessly. So,
okay.
I was wondering, what are CK and your favorite horror scores?
Mm.
Not just favorite themes, but the overall score of the movie.
Mm.
Like I said, I don't recall you talking about this, but if you had, let me know and chalk up something else. Thanks, Pogo.
Okay. The score of Phantasm.
Yep, that is a very, very good score.
Malcolm Seagrove and Fred Morrow, I think, actually. And there's a lot of John Carpenter stuff you could talk about,
yeah,
too. That would be right on the right next to Phantasm, you know. I mean, the Halloween score, tons of great music in that. Creepy shit, too.
Yeah, some people get on me about this, but for me, it's always been Dawn of the Dead. Even the whole score to that movie fits with every scene. I don't care what anybody says. It makes the scenes better. That's, to me, good score.
It does, sort of, because I know we're talking about, you know, Dario Argento changed the score in some parts of it, and the European cut of Dawn of the Dead is pretty damn bad, actually.
I've heard people actually say they like that version better. That is fucking bullshit.
See, and another question, we sort of got on the board. It was a post or something. Somebody wanted to know whether or not the Dawn of the Dead box set is worth buying. Ultimate Edition.
I think I replied to this pretty strongly, too.
Well, here's why I would say it's worth buying. If you're the Ultimate Dawn of the Dead fan, if you want all the cuts of the movie that's available, definitely buy it. But the best cut of the movie is the theatrical cut, if you ask me.
Yeah, the extended version, it doesn't really add that much. The European version's horrible to me, anyway.
Yeah.
I can't really watch it. And
there's some cool features in the box set, too, though. The Document of the Dead is a really cool documentary on the
film. See, that's why I would buy it, because that new documentary and everything, all the extras and that, geez. I mean, for anybody who's a fan of that movie, that's like the holy grail of horror films.
Yeah, Anchor Bay did a freaking great job.
Yeah, they won awards around that
I mean, that was a set that was years in the making, too. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing about that 2 or 3 years before it came out.
But anyway, scores with honorable mention to me, though, would be, Carpenter's The Fog and Halloween. And the one I listen to the most isn't a horror movie, but Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, great.
Great horror score. And then, you know, the score for Nightmare on Elm Street's a pretty good score, too.
Did you mention the score for The Fog?
Yeah, I did.
That's a good one. Any John Carpenter score is great. Throughout the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The Escape from New York score is awesome, too. I mean, the main theme.
It is.
See, the thing is, we've talked to Harry Manfredini, and we're big fans of his, too, from Friday the 13th and all the stuff he did, you know, after that. And it's sad, too, because, all the great theatrical scores really aren't used that much anymore. You know, replaced now with bands like Chimera or Drowning Pool or, just that crap.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, there's a big lack, and I think that's one of the reasons why we liked High Tension so much, because it went back just to the regular Italian-style, horror scores.
And they did have one band on there, and somebody can email me what it is, that had a really creepy song. I can't remember who it is now, but it was like it's a foreign band of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, though, that's the questions for the week for the fan mail. I guess we can take a break, and we'll be back with some DVD reviews.
Yeah, we'll take a quick commercial break here on Dead Pit.
Dead Kill. Zenon Pictures, in association with DeadPit.com, presents the very first DVD giveaway for the fans of Dead Pit.
Over the next several weeks, we here at DeadPit.com will be giving away several Zenon Picture DVD releases, such as Blood Ranch, Reality Kills, and the previously unreleased Headhunter.
And it all culminates on July 7th, when the grand prize is given away, including all three DVDs and a mini poster, along with a special piece of Dead Pit memorabilia.
So for more information about all contest rules, please visit www.deadpit.com. And for more information about all Zenon Pictures titles, please visit www.zenonpictures.com. Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I'm Uncle Bill.
And I'm the creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
And this is the ever special portion of the show where we review the horror films that we've seen in the last week.
And we've seen some pretty good ones, and we've seen one really bad one.
Yeah, I have to say that very few times does such a film of epic shittiness come across.
From a director that we actually enjoy.
Okay, you've got a film, and for those of you who know Joel M. Reed, you know that he directed a film that Troma distributed called Bloodsucking Freaks. Now, you got a film coming out. It's called Joel M. Reed's Bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
So automatically, I was thinking,
it's coming this Tuesday, by the way.
Yeah. I was thinking, oh, God, this is going to be freaking gory as shit because, Bloodsucking Freaks was amazing when it comes to that kind of homemade gore look and stuff. And I got the film, and as I was about halfway through it, I realized that may well be the most misleading name for a horror film I've ever come across.
Yeah, because I only remember seeing blood in one scene in the movie. And it's actually on a guy's shirt.
Yeah. Here's the synopsis, though. It's a Tales from the Crypt kind of anthology. Tales from the Crypt, the movie. Kind of, horror anthology. And there's, I think, three, four different stories in it. And, oh, God. It's not even really all that horror related. There's one where a guy is locked in a safe.
Which I think is the best one.
Yeah. He's some kind of businessman, and he's being haunted by a ghost of someone who, through his actions, got killed, and he can't get out of the safe for a month because he's supposed to be on vacation. Okay, so basically what ends up happening is at the end of that episode, after a month, they open the safe door, and he's had to live off eating all of his own money to survive. Then there's another episode, which is probably my favorite, if there is a favorite to be had in this, which is, there's a martial arts master who he learned the 9 secrets of self-defense, but he never learned the 10th secret. And at the end of the episode, and so what it is he gets in trouble with all the kung fu masters because he gave away and sold the secrets, which he was never supposed to do. At the end of it, he has to fight the guy that's the headmaster that knows the tenth secret. But the thing about it is the headmaster guy has no arms or legs.
Yeah. They call him Nubby.
Yeah. And, yeah, and the secret's not really anything that great either. But what can we really say about this movie?
This movie, all right, is another one from Subversive Cinema. Who, you know, they must realize that the movies are complete pieces of shit because they dress them up to be something awesome, you know. You know how you see these movies at Best Buy or somewhere and say, God, this movie looks like it's going to be killer. The cover on it's great, and it's got blood shots and stuff on the back. Then you take it home, and it just turns out to be just a boring piece of shit. We've done that on numerous occasions. And we're warning you right now, this movie sucks. Don't buy it, even though the cover art looks great, and they put a lot of details
and
in
it. And it's Joel M. Reed.
And Joel M. Reed's name's on it. And if you like anthologies, you won't like it, because we like anthologies, and this
sucks. You just won't like it. I mean, and you have to, I can't imagine the person that really would like that film, but the thing about it is it is really misleading, and if there's one thing I can't fucking stand, it's people that try to mislead by DVD covers and you into buying a DVD. And that's one of the worst that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Right up there with Unhinged, which is another piece of shit that I discourage anybody from buying.
Yeah. Why can't they make a movie called Bloodbath that actually has, like,
a bloodbath in it?
Yeah, with naked women taking bath in blood.
I don't know. Anyway, let's move on before I kill myself.
Yeah, I guess the next one we can talk about is from a great young director by the name of Amy Lynn Best.
Uh-huh, which she has done...
She's done a couple of movies. Mm-hmm. She did the documentary...
Spicy Sister Slumber Party, which we've yet to watch, but we will see.
She did that one. She did a short film, which is a bonus on this one, called Were Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is Severe Injuries, which is put out by Sub Rosa Studios.
And I have to say that I really like this movie a lot more than I thought I would when I looked at it and read the plot synopsis and stuff.
Yeah, you actually have a bunch of classic Scream Queens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a couple.
Well, you got Jesse Scott Lanier. You got Robin Griggs,
who is freaking hot as hell, by the way.
Yeah, you've got Debbie Rochon's in the movie.
Yeah, she's got like a little cameo. And then Brink Stevens got a really short cameo in it.
Yeah, but the thing about this movie is, I was talking about this before, is the writing in these movies is really, really good, and that's one of the things I like the most about it. And it has some originality to it. It's about a serial killer who comes from a long line of serial killers, but they all, for some reason or other, can't seem to get, like...
They can't seem to kill.
Yeah.
They want to be serial killers.
Exactly. They always have problems with serial killing, and there's always some kind of mishap that ends up killing them. Well, he's trying to change that, but he runs into another serial killer at a sorority house, and they're all having a slumber party.
Yeah.
So, kind of like the comedy comes from when they meet, what happens when they're trying to compete with each other for the killing. And it's a really good story, really good plot, and it's directed well. And I actually liked a lot of it. There's a guy in it who was in Resurrection Game, too, that Mike Watt did.
He was the other serial killer, right?
Yeah, he was the other serial killer. I think he's probably one of the better actors that I've seen in a while.
You know, the cool thing about Resurrection Game and Severe Injuries, which Resurrection Game was an Amy Lynn Best movie. It was directed by her husband, Mike Watt.
Yeah.
But anyway, they don't take themselves too seriously. You know, they know they're sort of winking at you the whole time this movie's going on. If you like the Slumber Party Massacre movies, it's sort of an ode to those movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a very comical sort of way. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool.
I did, too. The guy's name's Tim Gross, by the way. I just found that out. And if you want to find out more about the film or, you know, Tim Gross or anybody in general, go to www.b-movie.com, and that's Sub Rosa's official website.
And I know you can also go to happycloudpictures.com.
Yeah, which is Mike Watt, naming them best.
Yeah, which is their company.
All those who care.
So, I guess we can go on, though. I mean, we've got a couple more we want to talk about. I guess we could touch on real quick that we got to see Tom Savini's Scream Greats, which is a short, about an hour-long documentary that Fangoria released back in the 80s.
Which I believe was supposed to be part of a set
of Scream Greats, and I'm not sure if they ever, I don't think they did anymore. Scream Greats Volume 1 was the title of this one. And it basically shows all kinds of behind-the-scenes shots from Savini's films. You have scenes from Dawn of the Dead, of course, and Day of the Dead, and his Tales from the Dark Side episode, which is really cool.
Uh-huh.
You know,
it's
tons
got
of
stuff with his family, and like he's sitting around with Tasso Stavrakis, which was one of the guys that helped do the stunt work and was a zombie in Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, I think.
Yeah, and you've got
it wasn't a zombie in Day
Greg
of the
Nicotero's Dead. Also in it. A very young Greg Nicotero. It was right around the time they did Day of the Dead, I guess a year or two after that. You know, if you haven't seen it, I think Tom Savini, you mentioned before, he actually sells DVDRs
yeah,
of
he
it.
Does.
But as far as official release goes, I have no idea. I mean, it's interesting as hell. I know it. There's a couple of documentaries on Tom Savini out there. There's another one, I think it's just called Horror Effects with Tom Savini.
The one that I had on tape?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that either because I could never find it after a point. I had it on VHS.
Somebody stole it from you.
Yeah, for a long time.
But yeah, I mean, it's cool to watch if you want to kill an hour. I mean, it's interesting as hell.
Yeah, he actually shows how to make a squib in it.
Yeah.
And how to, you know, operate.
He gets a rubber and fills it full of, you know, fake blood.
I don't know why. I just love shit like that. I love anything that has to do with behind-the-scenes stuff with anybody, directors, special effects, anything like that.
Yeah, I'd love to see, you know, an official release of this sometime, which yeah. I doubt it ever happening. But next one I want to talk about, though, is a movie from Tartan, Asia Extreme, and it's directed by Yoshihiro Nakamura, The Booth.
Mm-hmm. I just watched this today, so it's fresh in my mind. And believe it or not, this is one of the few films that is along the same lines of the type of, you know, Ringu films.
Yep.
And, you know, the Marabito that we watched last week. But I actually like this film because it was actually put together well for once. You know, a lot of these films aren't, they either leave you like, what the hell's going on, or they don't end with any kind of clarity most of the time. And this one does. It's a story of a radio station, a particular studio in a radio station.
A particular DJ.
Yeah, who he hangs himself, and this is like in the 50s or 60s, I think. And then there's a guy that comes back into the radio station to just for a day, I think is what it was.
Yeah, they're renovating his studio, his regular studio.
Yeah, and so they're recording he's got like a romance talk show and all this stuff. And as they're recording it, all this weird stuff starts happening. They start getting this interference on the phone line.
You get like a woman's voice saying, "Liar." Of course, it's in Japanese, though. She's probably, "Joshua, liar."
Yeah, and then he's like, "Hajjabal." But seriously, you come to find out that this guy's done a bunch of horrible things.
Yeah,
throughout his
and
life.
And there's flashbacks constantly of stuff that he's done.
And this voice, you know, he gives relationship advice to these people, but yet most of the stuff he gives advice about, he's done exactly the wrong way, you know, that they're talking about. And it keeps showing, you know, how he did it in flashbacks and all this stuff.
And he really starts freaking out, too, once he starts thinking back about the stuff he's done. And you get this constant voice coming back in through the station speakers, "Liar, liar," you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it starts to unravel, and you think you've got it figured out about, you know, an hour into the film, because there's this whole subplot about think that he's killed somebody, but then all of a sudden she shows up, and she's, you know.
And it's something totally different.
Yeah, not going to tell you the ending of the film or anything, but it's got one of the better twist ending kind of scenarios.
Yeah. And I'm going to actually highly recommend it.
Yeah, I would recommend it too, and that is saying a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is coming from people that normally don't like Japanese films, but this one was good. Actually.
Yeah, it's actually a Japanese film where the plot works all the way through.
And I was telling you before that I wouldn't be surprised at all to see somebody remake this in America.
Oh, it's coming. I can guarantee
it. Yeah, because it's just too original.
But that's from our friends at Tartan Asia Extreme, and you can visit their website, www.tartanvideousa.com.
Yeah, they got
tons of special features on this shit and DTS.
The DTS sound is freaking killer. But we can go on to probably one of our favorite fun movies that we've seen in a long time. And it's from Kevin Strange. And you can check it out, hackmovies.com. H-A-C-K movies.com. And this is from Kevin Strange is the director's name.
Mm-hmm.
who actually stars. Yeah. Yeah, he stars in the movie as Willie Nutsack.
Oh man, I can't honestly remember the last time I had more fun watching a horror movie. And it, I have to say that it's probably, it's just right up our alley of shit that we like to watch.
As what I was telling him earlier, because I watched it before he did, if we ever made a movie, it would be something like this.
Yeah. It's the story of a band called Dream Reaper. All the members of it have some kind of really weird, like, personality quirks. And they're trying to put together, like,
the best rock band of all time. Well, he calls the best rock band of all time Dream Reaper.
And all he wants to sing about is the Loch Ness Monster and stuff like that. Yeah. And the bass player, who it turns out is gay, he wants to make, like, love ballads and stuff like that. The drummer, all he wants to do is talk about ninjas. That's another great part of the film.
And also, though, I've never seen, like, we talk a lot about, like, gratuitous sex scenes and stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
This movie has gratuitous masturbation scenes.
Yeah, per scene, this may be one of the highest ratio of masturbation scenes in any film. Yeah. That should be a high selling point. But the Dream Reaper in the film is actually this guy that's dressed in one of those like costumes you see around like Walmart at Halloween time.
It's just like a hood that has like a black mesh over, you like know, a fencing, like a Grim Reaper.
Yeah, it's like a fencing mesh type of thing over his face. And he just, he comes in, and it's kind of exactly like Nightmare on Elm Street 3, the Dream Warriors in a way, because he starts to invade each one of their dreams, and they all have, like, these ways that they, you know.
What's funny is, though, before they have dreams, they have to jack off before they go to sleep. All of them do.
Yeah, or they have to jack off before they do anything. They go to sleep. They're constantly, like, jacking off throughout the film.
Yeah, and there's one scene in particular with the bass player who, he's looking at a gay porn mag.
Yeah.
Then he sees that somebody's under the sheets, you know, pleasuring him, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he finds out, you know, after he's done, that it's the Dream Reaper. And the Dream Reaper's full of, like, you know, he's got a couple of really hilarious one-liners. And, you know, he says something to the effect of, "Now it's time for me to get some head," or something like that, and he cuts the guy's head off.
Yeah, there's all kinds of there's so many funny scenes in that movie that I can't even keep them all straight. But there's a scene where all that the lead singer wants to do is watch In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Yep.
Which is like a reoccurring joke in the film. And there's a part where he's watching it on television. That's when the Dream Reaper first comes to visit him. And there's this background noise of the TV, and it's somebody that sounds just like Leonard Nimoy, and he's like, "I can't believe you actually believe in Loch Ness and this shit." And all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, oh God.
There's another funny scene, though, with the drummer, who's the big, you know, ninja fan.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, I was remembering that.
Where he actually tries to, it's the Dream Reaper, he tries to stomp his head in, right? And ends up being a watermelon.
They don't cut it.
It's a watermelon.
But it works. That's the thing. It's so damn funny that it works.
Yeah.
And there's a big training montage in it at the very end that where the guy's getting, like, ready. You know, Kevin Strange getting all of his stuff ready. He's got, like, a bandana, all that stuff. And he's holding it up.
And actually, the female guitarist had a shirt that says, "I love Dick," and he wears it.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Alice from Part 4 who
what it was.
Yeah, that's what it tried to be, like a, I guess, an homage to that or making fun of that or whatever it was.
But anyway, the end battle, too, where he's got this huge, like, the only way you can kill the Dream Reaper is this Masters of the Universe Conan-like sword.
It's like a plastic fucking sword.
Yeah.
And you can see it, like, bending and stuff.
And the Dream Reaper has this plastic sickle that you can get at, like, you know, Kmart during Halloween. It's just one of the things. Why in the hell this hadn't got picked up by Troma? I have no fucking idea. Because there's, like, that's one of the best movies like that I've seen, and it's perfect for that kind of thing. But
if you're a fan of trauma stuff, you're going to love the hell out of this, no doubt. I think it's even better than a lot of the stuff that Trauma's releasing now.
Right now it is, yeah. I mean, there's no reason in the world why they shouldn't get distributed by Trauma. Because that, if, you know, Rock and Roll Space Patrol and that shit can get picked up. I have no idea why these guys.
Also, though, I guess we could mention exactly why the Dream Reaper is after them. And it's funny, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, there's the Dream Reaper mentions there's all kinds of different Reapers. Mm-hmm. And they all kid him and aggravate him because the band Dream Reaper sucks ass. And he mentions that, you know, and he goes, I'm sick of the other Reapers, you know,
bothering me.
Yeah. So that's why he's after him. You know. I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Your band sucks.
I'll say this, too. If you're a fan of metal or hard rock music, you know, and horror movies, this would be like one of the best movies you've ever seen, I guess.
Yeah, great comedy movie. Actually has a pretty good theme in it, too. That they
yeah, there's a weird theme that kind of sounds like, that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of Am I Evil, the solo breakdown in Am I Evil by Diamond Head. It's got like a real cool thing that plays whenever something. But anyway.
I would love to know the budget of this. I'm sure that I can find out. But I don't think it was too high. And that's probably what makes it so good.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much. We don't ask for much around here. We just ask to be entertained. And this film entertains.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'll say about it.
Yep, it did. And I'd highly recommend it. And you can go to hackmovies.com for the info on that. Anyhow, though, I think that's the end of the show.
Yeah, this is concludes another wonderful edition.
Another edition of the two-hour Dead Pit Show. I guess it's going to be around 2 hours.
It probably will be, because we can't seem to fucking shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, the round table run longer than we expected, folks, but, you know.
We're just excited about horror, folks, and we want you to be excited about
it. We want the whole world to be excited about horror.
Yeah. And so, I'm Uncle Bill.
And I'm CK.
And we're going to be signing off now, and we'll see you next week, where we're going to have the best of the worst.
It's going to be a special show where we celebrate all of the great bad movies.
So we hope you enjoy that. We hope you enjoyed the round table. Y'all have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow, and go fuck a butt.
Yep, and we'll see you next week. You can hear us. You're on.